in the public hearing, public testimony portion of this public hearing. By way of announcement, our legislative fiscal office is represented by Susie Jordan. Our legislative subcommittee assistant is Linda Schar, our clerk for the day. And our overflow room is hearing room C. I'm not sure why we got the hearing room 174, which is smaller, and our overflow is the larger of the two rooms, but that's fine. So we're those that are in hearing room C will have an opportunity to sign up to give public testimony, and then we'll call them and allow time if and we'll go ahead and collect the witness registration during the public hearing, public testimony portion of this public hearing today. And so with that, we'll go ahead and start the public testimony regarding the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. And there are various of our committee members who have been called, and some are viewing right now these proceedings by television, and we'll bring them down. Today we have with us at least one person that's traveled over 100 miles to be here, and we'll want to go ahead and offer that person an opportunity to testify first. And so let's go ahead and proceed. Mr. Todd Lampert, is it?
Legport.
Todd, would you like to come forward, and we'll go ahead and start with your testimony this morning, please.
Okay. Mine's going to be pretty quick. Basically, I'm supporting what Mr. Harold has put forth in the letters to you folks. I've been with the Liquor Commission for 6 years, and or liquor agent for 6 years. So I'm currently in the Dalles, and I've been staying and working with Mr. Harold. He basically has the pulse of the liquor agents, the majority. You're going to hear from a group of people that don't represent the majority. They only represent about 18 to 20 people. I've done phone calls and called at least 35 agents and have about 99%. I've only had one agent that didn't agree with it. He thought we should have more than what Mr. Harold is proposing. Mr. Ferrioli and Mr. Bill Morissette received cards back from letters that Mr. Harold put out from different agents, and they both agreed that the pulse seems to be, or the group as liquor agents, all seem to lead towards Mr. Harold's letter. And most liquor agents are for what Mr. Harold is proposing, and all I'm asking and backing is what he says. I want you to just keep in mind that the majority of the agents do support the letter that Mr. Harrell has put out, and you should have a copy of that. Okay.
Thank you very much, Mr. And would you spell your name for the record, please?
Leyport.
Leyport. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Leyport.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hayden is recognized.
Sir, it would help me. You see these books here? This is one agency. See those books there?
Yeah.
That's the rest of the agencies. I haven't read this letter.
Oh, okay.
It's 6 pages of close type.
Okay.
You assumed I would read it.
Yeah, well,
and I might.
Yeah.
Maybe you could tell me what's in it in 27.
Well, basically what we did, I basically read it with John, and we went through it. He called me on the phone. We've talked. We've known John for a long time. Basically, we asked that we provided for four items. We asked that the agent's comp be a part of OLCC's operating budget. Every year we go before the committees, and cost of business is going up. And basically, we don't have any support in that way. We're a monopoly. We're protected from competition. But on the other terms, we're a monopoly, and we can't set our prices. In any business, if the cost of doing business goes up, then you raise your stuff up to protect yourself. Well, as a monopoly, we can't do that. My insurance, for example, the insurance for my store last year was $538. This year, the same company that I was with went up to $7,500 and something. I did find another insurance company that will cover me for $985. Well, there's still $400 there that I didn't get. I just got my taxes back last year, and I was $1,200 in the hole from what I did the year before, even though I had a $30,000 increase. So we're constantly, by cost of business going up with phones, labor, that kind of thing,
we're not protected, even though we're a monopoly. And so what we're asking for is that because our pay is constantly juggled, we never seem to get a pay raise. In 4 years, we haven't had a pay raise. Well, the cost of, you know, doing business has gone up. My rent went up 25%. So I never got reimbursed for that. So we're asking that OLCC actually be, our wage would be a part of compensation, would be a part of OLCC's operating cost. The other thing is that we're asking for...
So you want fixed, you want fixed wages, you want state set wages?
What we'd like is, we'd like to, we're on a sliding scale right now, but what we'd like is that our pay is part of our compensation is part of our pay. And so what we'd like to do is get that as a part of OLCC's operating budget so it can't be cut or moved around like a football.
Mr. Chair.
Would it help to have Mr. Harold make his presentation? Because
maybe.
It's based upon his letter, I think.
Yeah.
Ms. Jordan?
Mr. Chair, what I believe he's talking about is taking the agent's compensation out of the limited portion of the agency's budget and putting it in non-limited so that they can...
Thank you.
Treat it as the same as they do costs of goods sold.
Well, I'll do that. I'll wait till Mr. Harold
okay.
talks. I'll know what the letter says.
Thank you very much, Mr. Labor. Let's go ahead and have Mr. John Harold come forward, in as much as it appears that that's where the testimony is going to be based upon. And Mr. Harold, welcome. Go ahead and give your name and where you're from for the record, please.
Okay, my name's John Harold. I'm a liquor agent from Lincoln City, Oregon, 1091. And in the past, I've contacted either in person, verbally, over the phone, by letter, basically every agent in the state, and have always tried to express a majority opinion of what the agents feel. I have some of my own opinions, but I've always tried to pass on what the input I get back from the majority of the agents. And we've had a response at times of 238 agents, we'll have, let's say, 120, 130 response, which is pretty good return when the majority of those are exclusive agents. In other words, sell nothing but liquor. They are not into other related businesses and that. And basically what we've come up with, as Todd was relating to, is we had worked with Senator Ferrioli on trying to get a bill established where our cost of us doing business, in other words, instead of it having, the committee staff explained, instead of it being limited each year, that it would actually become a cost of doing business to OLCC as trucking the liquor is, warehousing, and other overheads are, so that it can be a set fee and not be adjusted up or down depending on what's happening, you know, with, say, government and the general fund.
Representative Hayden, question?
Sure.
Just quickly, how would that be different than what we had before when the liquor agents were state employees?
Well, the difference is right now we are supposed to be contracted, independent contractors, I should say, and so the state does not pay us any medical, any retirement, any vacation pay or anything. We are just paid on a flat, as it is right now, 8.54%. And that just, we get that money each month, and out of that money, we have to pay all our overhead costs, whether it be rent, insurance, employees, our own health insurance, anything to do with the retirement plans for ourselves. All our costs come out of that, and what's left is what we live on as individuals. So what we're looking at is, like, this point has been fixed for the last 4 years, and it's being recommended that it be fixed again for the next 2 years. And in those papers that I sent to the committee a while back, it shows, I just used my store as an example because I'm kind of in the middle in sales of all the exclusive liquor stores, and I'm not in downtown Portland, but I'm not in a real rural area being over there in Lincoln City. In the last several years, my income from sales has gone up hardly any. In fact, I can get the sheet out. Over the last 6 years, my increase has been $126,000 in sales, and I'm actually paid at my store 6.8%.
Say that again, how much in sales?
$126,000. That's how much my sales have gone up
over the last 6 years, from 6 years ago, what I was selling.
And what's the total? If you'll give us the total.
Oh, the total of sales?
Yeah.
Yes, the total of sales.
I don't have that. I just took the increase and decrease. In 1995, my sales decreased 56,000.
1995?
Yes, sir. There are sheets to all the, you have copies of all of this there. In 1996, my sales went up 104,000. In 1997, my sales went up 10,000. In 1998, my sales went down 4,000. In 1999, they went up 68,000. And last year, they went up 4,000.
Well, Mr. Harold, I'm a small businessman, and yes. I know what I gross every year. I can go back 3 or 4 or 5 years. What's your average gross?
My average gross right now is 1,400,000.
Okay, thank you.
1,400,000.
Yes.
And your average compensation is 6.8%.
Right.
Mr. Chair, why should yours be 6.8 when the standard compensation package is 8.54?
It is done on a sliding scale, and what they do is, if you're an exclusive liquor store, you get paid a smaller percentage, and the larger your sales, the percentage also goes down, and it varies. There's different variances on that, and if you're a non-exclusive, where let's say you're a drugstore and you have liquor in there, they're paid at a higher percentage because their volume is so small compared to ours.
Mr. Chair, could I?
Yes, please follow up, President Johnson.
One other question. I also have been a small business person, and I guess the question that I need to sort of set all the testimony that I think we're going to hear in context is, you're an entrepreneur. And as in any entrepreneurial exercise, you have an opportunity to make a profit, and you have some costs, and you have the freedom as an independent contractor to affect some of the variables in there. You're getting a fixed percentage return at, in your case, 6%+. You don't pay inventory costs. You don't pay any shipping costs. And I'm trying to understand why it is that for entrepreneurs, there's a question to the state about paying us more as a fixed percentage versus the entrepreneurial activities that would support any small business person, where you have the ability to affect your sales by certain things that you do in your store or certain things that you don't do. I'm just trying to set this in a context.
Right, and that's an excellent question, Representative Johnson. I had, in the past, I had 2 liquor stores in California for 13 years. Mm-hmm. And there it's a whole different, it's an open market. At one liquor store, I sold beer, wine, liquor, groceries. I had a deli inside, like a Subway, guns, ammo, gasoline. We sold everything.
Ladies' shoes, haberdashery.
Just about.
Okay.
And there, what would happen is, if I had an increase in overhead, like my insurance would go up, minimum wages, whatever, if you've been in business, you know what I'm talking about.
Sure.
What I would do is then I would increase my percentage of markup, say 0.5% or 1% to offset that. Electric bill goes up. My beer would go up accordingly because of the cost in cooling the beer and so on. So I could always make adjustments that, at least as long as I did my job to keep my sales at their level or growing, I could at least stay my income to keep up with inflation or overhead costs increased. Here we do not have that opportunity. Here, in fact, actually over the last 4 years, it's been going down because the percentage has stayed the same. Minimum wage has gone up dramatically. Our insurance costs has gone up dramatically. My rent has doubled in the last 2 years, and all these costs keep going up. My health insurance rates have gone up. I have no way of recuperating any of these costs.
Because the Liquor Commission sets the price of a bottle of vodka, and you can't adjust that at all to reflect an increase in your costs.
Exactly.
So that a bottle of vodka in your agency, 1091, is going to cost exactly the same in Bend or in Newburgh or in
Jordan Valley, any place.
See, I'm trying to demonstrate my naivete with liquor prices. I've never been in a liquor store.
No problem, Representative.
But this is the problem, and of course, we don't want to start affecting the setting of the price of the liquor. If this is part of the controlled state system, which the vast majority of agents do support the principle of the controlled state. I know myself, in comparison to California, I think the system works far better if you want to control alcohol going to underage people or intoxicated people. But the thing is, we have no control to offset our rising costs. And what we were offering was the idea that we've become a cost of doing business to OLCC. Just like if, say, a freight company says, well, your percentage of freight costs are going up 2% next year because diesel fuel went up, the state has to pay that. And that's what we're proposing, is that our pay would be on that same level. We would have a negotiating team voted by the agents to work with OLCC, so that it wouldn't get out of hand either, where an agency would or an agent would come in and say, I need a 2% increase, or in our case, that would be a lot more than that, you know, and get out of control. It would be controlled. It would have regulations, would have guidelines.
Mr. Chair, one more question.
Yes, Representative Johnson.
Have you ever served on the Agents Advisory Committee?
I was on that for 4 years, Representative.
And you declined to serve anymore? You weren't reappointed? Or how is that committee formed? What's at the core of my question is that the universe that I come from relies heavily on advisory committees, both to advise state agencies and to advise private not-for-profits. They use those folks as a sounding board. And clearly where your agents have a pecuniary interest in what the agency does, it seems to me that your advisory board is a pretty important portal of information into the OLCC. So my question is, how do you think that that committee operates? Give me a little information about your experience and why you declined not to serve anymore.
Well, Representative Johnson, I would actually like to still be on it. Voting came up, and someone else had got more votes than I did.
That happens.
We
that
understand
happens.
That.
Yeah. Okay. And there's no term limits in that. What they do is they have different agents from different levels of volumes of stores, the different categories, and then also one to represent, say, non-exclusives and so on. So you have a cross-section of different agents, and then they're voted from different regions also, so that you may have one from the metropolitan area, maybe one from the high desert. So try and get a good cross-section. I think it works quite well. It's a good pipeline. Myself, I guess I didn't campaign very hard this last time around to be reelected because I thought the Agent Advisory Board didn't have enough teeth. We would come up with suggestions. But being strictly advisory board, if we recommended something, if it wasn't perceived on the other end by OLCC staff as viable, it would be swept under the carpet. It would not be taken. It would be, I almost put it as if you were dealing with a teenager and you're the parents, and the teenagers come to you and say, I need your car tonight. And the parents say, well, I don't really think you do. And that's the end of the debate.
You live in a very fortunate household.
It hasn't been around my daughter.
I got him a car, so I don't have to worry about that. But this is also part of this package that we were working with Senator Ferrioli. We'd want the advisory board, as part of this also cost of doing business, to have teeth. And what I mean by teeth is if they come with a real good point, like a couple that we have here this morning, like agents starting to have to pay for their own bags to put the state's liquor in, costs going up on credit card machines when it's really a service to offer to the public to make it easier for them, but does cut into our profit picture. Like in my case, that'd be about another $1,400 this year that I'll lose right off the top in net profit. Things like that, the advisory board then could sit down with OLCC staff and negotiate these points, and if it was viable, as was suggested by Representative Morissette, if there was a deadlock that OLCC says, no, you have to pay for the bags, and the agents say, no, we can't afford it, you would then get an arbitrator in there to come to a fair settlement to where both sides are heard and given equal consideration. And I really think that agent advisory board can be something that could really help preserve the system, which I think the majority of agents really want to see. We don't want to see this go away. We don't want to see it get out of hand. And I think that could help in controlling costs, give a viable chance for the agents to make a fair living. No one is asking the state to make as well for the, you know, independent, but just to stay ahead of, say, inflation. And so that you look back and 4 years ago, I actually had more spendable than I do today. And it isn't that I'm extravagant. In my particular case, I've been an agent for 12 years. I've had 2 one-week vacations. I work 6 days a week. Not all the time I'm there. Sometimes I'm making bank runs and so on. But if you really do your job, you are locked into it. And all I would ever ask is just that I get a fair compensation back and I can control it so I don't go downhill rather than stay on the cutting edge and do the best job I can.
Thank you very much, Mr. Harrell. Let me just ask, coming back to your, and we probably, we each have received a copy of the 5-page document to the members of the Ways and Means from that was sent from Lincoln City on the 26th. I think what I'd like to do is I'd like to have you go through at least some of the more salient material there, and whatever you feel is important, probably beginning with the material, the objectives of the agent's needs. If you would feel comfortable in doing that, Mr. Harrell, that may give us some better feel. But I want to just make absolutely certain that what you're saying is that you are limited to 6.8%.
Yes, Representative.
And so on your marginal dollar, you get 6.8%, and on your first dollar, you get 6.8%.
Yes, Representative.
So on $1,000,004, at 6.8%, you'll gross a total of $95,200 approximately.
Yes.
Okay. And then in your store, you only in the North Lincoln City, you only sell just distilled spirits. You don't have anything else in addition to that.
I do sell anything of related items that's allowed by the state, which is usually bar supplies, glassware, mixes, and cigarettes. Although I've never seen a drink with a cigarette in it, but it is part of the allowed related items.
Okay, this discussion has been held before, but in your discussions, and you say that you've called most of the other agents, in your discussions, did they share with you any desires that they had to sell additional items, ancillary or auxiliary items that could be profitable in addition to some of the mixes and glasses and cigarettes?
Representative Butler, there are a lot of agents that would like to get out into other areas like maybe snack foods, you know, beef jerky, pretzels, potato chips, so on like that. But two factors enter into it. One is most of them are on very limited square footage. And so that would be kind of a tight issue. For the extra square footage they'd have to rent, the dollar return probably would not be beneficial. And then secondly, most of the agents that believe in the old LCCC controlled system are afraid this would be a step that would allow the lobbies like grocery stores, your Circle K, and so on, chains to then say, well, then these stores are venturing into our revenue. We should be able to get our hands on hard liquor too. And we would rather give up the potential of the extra income in that area to make sure that the system maintains its viability.
Well, much of the snack food items, and excuse me for just venturing out of that, much of the snack food items, the margin is closer to 50 to 100% gross profit as compared to the 6.8%. Is it your position that given an opportunity to have additional sales items that don't infringe terribly on some of the other folks, that you still wouldn't do that, or that wouldn't be a good idea for you?
Representative Butler, if there was an ironclad lock guarantee that we could control the lobbyists, that the liquor would still stay in a controlled state regulated by OLCC, and we could sell those products, I'd be first in line to do that because that would allow me to have more of an income. But I myself have been coming down here to Salem for about 10 years now in different committees, different groups, and I've seen bills and so on get kind of out of control where they come in the front door for one thing, and when they get out the back door, it's totally been changed. And I just think our group, there's 238 of us, we're very small. We do perform, I think, an excellent job for the state of Oregon, but I think our lobbying power and our voice would be kind of run over when you go up against grocery store chains and so on.
Okay. I guess we'll come back to the actual computation of the. I'm having trouble coming up with the 6.8% from the first and last sale because the information that's provided to us indicates that the agent's commission average is 8.54%. Must be some awfully high earnings in some small stores, evidently.
To be honest with you, Representative Butler, I don't have the exact numbers. I have heard that some of your non-exclusive agencies get up like 18, 20%.
It shows that 13% of annual sales class one up to $210,000 in sales. I assume that's an annual sale figure. Base compensation is 13% of the first $10,000 in monthly sale, and then scales back from that.
Right. It's a fluctuating, graduating scale. It's quite involved.
But on 1,000,004, you're in a class five, which puts you up near the top end of that, and I'm not sure what the percentages do at that particular point. But again, the average indicates that there's 8.54%. Do you have a copy of your letter there that starts with the objectives of the agents, what you need?
Yes, I do, Representative Butler.
Did you want to go through any of that for the benefit of the public record?
Certainly. I just didn't want to take too much time.
We do have a number of people signed up, but I think yours is probably some of the testimony that other folks will base some of theirs on, and then we do have some other folks here that we want to spend some time with, but. Just if you could just encapsulate the information that you've got there for us, because there are a number of folks that don't have a copy of this.
All right, Representative Butler, thank you. The most important thing of all is the agent's compensation to become a fixed cost of doing business, as the cost of shipping and the warehousing and the transportation of liquor are now. Agents also would like a living increase every biennium, which is equal to approximately 0.25 increase added to today's base of 8.54%. That is based on the inflation index, and that's what we feel will at least keep us up with inflation so that our own personal level standard of living won't fall. Also, we feel that we shouldn't stop OLCC from charging agents for liquor bags, repacks, and possibly the shipping of the state liquor to agents, because we feel if we lose ground on one, like we start paying for bags, next would be to pay to have the state's liquor delivered to a state liquor store to put the money in the state treasury.
But right now they don't do that.
No.
Okay.
It used to be about 4 years ago, the state of Oregon paid for everything related to the sale of liquor, including pencils. If you needed a pencil to mark something down, you got that from the state of Oregon. But this has all been slowly being chipped away, and it's now, instead of using a small chisel and a small hammer, it's going into a little bit larger set of tools. The other object, which I talked about, is make the Agent Advisory Committee a part of the decision-making team of OLCC with a voice, not just an opinion, concerning the stores with the power of arbitration to settle differences of objectives.
Representative Johnson is recognized.
Would you contemplate then that the Agents Advisory Committee, if they were given that authority, would absorb some of the costs? You talked about mediation and arbitration. Those things come with a price tag. Would it be your expectation that there would be reciprocity between the two sides to cover those costs?
Representative Johnson, that is something I've never discussed with all the agents that I've talked to, and I couldn't speak for them on that point. In my personal opinion, if it was something to where it was very viable and realistic, I personally would be willing to do that. But I cannot speak for the majority of them because I did not ask them, so I would rather not go on record for that part of it.
Thank you.
Okay.
Then I just summed up, we have not had an increase in our base pay percentage in 4 years, and is being proposed to stay the same for the next 2 years. Meanwhile, our rent, insurance, labor, utility costs have gone up dramatically. Sales have climbed in the state, which is usually the reason given for not increasing it, because sales are going up. But the sales are limited to mainly 20 stores in the metropolitan area of the state. I have a list that was put together by Todd Laport that actually shows the percentages of the stores. It's one of the sheets that you have there, that in 1994 we had 10 stores at 2 million. I'll just jump ahead. In 1999, we have now 30 stores at 2 million, and six of them at 3 million, and one of them at almost 4.5 million. And this is where the majority of the sales increases are and where the majority of the extra compensation is going. 98 other stores have lost income in the last 6 years, and sales increases are minimal or non-existent. So they're not making any more than they were 6 years ago, yet all overhead and costs have gone up dramatically.
Yes, Representative Johnson.
Just as a curiosity, the one at 4.5 million, where is that store?
It's downtown Portland, Representative Johnson.
Uptown, thank you.
Your biggest stores are in the metropolitan Portland area, and then, believe it or not, Bend, Oregon. That store usually vies for either one, two, or three in the slot, because that is the fastest growing county, I guess, and city in the state of Oregon right now.
At one time in the country. I'm a Redmond girl.
Oh, well, I had the liquor store in Prineville. I was in Prineville for about 12 years farming until the drought came. But, yeah, it's quite rapid. And that's where all that extra compensation is going in dramatic sales. And that's why I use my store, that my sales really haven't increased. Yet I'm in a tourist area that, you know, half my sales are tourists. But yet it's at a pretty even keel. Liquor sales overall, volume-wise, has been going down in trends due to other influencing factors. And so what you have is the cost of liquor has gone up, and that's what's kind of kept it at that same level.
The lounges buy their liquor supplies from you folks, don't they?
Yes, they do, Representative Butler. Okay.
What I'd like to do is I'd like to go ahead and have at some point we'll ask Senator Corno to be sure, but I think maybe each of these issues probably needs to be addressed back by the OLCC to the committee so that we can have a response to the comments we made. And then point C, you'd already touched base on that.
Yes, the high population in the
right.
North Valley, Greater Portland.
Okay.
And then just point D, basically no pay increases by the state, medical insurance, minimum wages, rent, cost of doing business, and so on, have all hurt the East and Coast areas the most. Rent has skyrocketed in some of the more metropolitan area, which has also helped wipe out even some of the larger increases in sales for those stores.
So really, if I understand what you're saying, to kind of get a flavor of what's happening is that if you're in a high growth area, or if you're in an area where you've got other kinds of things that you could subsidize your operation in, you're probably doing okay in a high growth area, and you're probably holding your own because you have other sales items, snack foods, and so forth that you might be able to sell in a non-exclusive store. But the folks in the middle are the ones that might get the pressure then. And that would be these 98 other stores that have lost income during that.
Yes, Representative Butler. And that is the problem. Like I say, so many stores, they don't have the square footage to venture out. Some of them can't even go in, say, to tobacco sales. My wife has the South Lincoln City liquor store and does a tremendous volume. She does about half the volume I do in liquor, but she does about three times the volume I do in tobacco. She sells more tobacco than I do in liquor. And on an average, the markup's very small on that because of the competitiveness. On an average, it's about 7% markup. And there's a tremendous volume, and it's based on doing volume, but it also takes up about 40% of the store. And in a lot of your smaller stores, medium-sized stores, like I know when I was in Prineville, I would never have been able to allocate that kind of room. I couldn't afford to.
The South Lincoln is an exclusive store in effect.
Yes.
Okay. Representative Johnson?
I just want to make sure I understood you correctly. She sells more in cigarettes than you do in alcohol.
Yes, Representative Johnson. I sell about $1.4 million in liquor, and I sell a little over, I think it's about 800 and some thousand in tobacco right now. My wife's store, the South Lincoln City store, she does about 750,000 in liquor, and like I say, she does well over $1 million in tobacco. She does, I think this year she'll hit about $1.5 million.
It's an amazing thing to admit, but that's the first time that it really has hit me, the magnitude of tobacco purchases.
Oh, it's tremendous, and also especially when you think a small carton of cigarettes on an average is from $28 to $32 for a major brand. I mean, that's, it doesn't take very many sales to really pop up, where the average liquor bottle is probably only in the $5 to $7 range. So you have more sales involved.
You're at 7% on the tobacco approximately, and
yes.
Again, that's approximately 6.8 on the liquor then. Okay. Does her store also average 6.8% on the marginal sale?
That's her store. I can't delve into that too deeply or I'll get shot. I think she's about at the same percentage. She might be at a slightly higher percentage because she's a smaller store.
Where to be a smaller store?
Right, smaller liquor sales.
Okay. Representative Hayden?
Well, just a question. It appears that there's more to the gross income than the $1.4 million. There's another $800,000 in tobacco, so your store is actually grossing between $2 and $3 million a year.
Yes, overall in gross sales.
Yeah.
Yes.
And your wife is doing the same, so between you, you're grossing $4 to $6 million a year in one family.
Yes.
At 8% or 6% or whatever. Thank you.
Representative Hayden, though, in general, to give you an idea, when I had my liquor stores in California, the average markup in my store was 22%. And although I did sit on my own inventory down there, a liquor license at that time was $125,000. I averaged about $150,000 in inventory. Now, this is 25 years ago prices of all my products in the store, but that's what I averaged, 22%. But also by being able to do my own purchasing and operating my business as an independent person, I could get in a buy sometimes where I'd make as much as 38 to 40% on wine and certain beers. And that was the flexibility, just as we do now with tobacco. If I do need to make a little more to cover my tobacco shelving, the sitting on the floor of the inventory, I can raise my tobacco price 0.5% to the public, which is minimal, and still recoup what I'm putting out. I have that flexibility.
I don't begrudge you the income. I'm just, because you're asking, I'm curious to know what it is.
And you don't have the flexibility with regard to the distilled spirits relative to raising it 0.5% or something of that nature?
Representative Butler, we have absolutely no say in that.
Okay. Any questions further? Anything further that you'd like to present, Mr. Harold?
The only other thing I'd like to, Representative Butler, is that in talking to all the agents, to be honest, I could not find any support among the agents for that suggested 4 cents a bottle that's being proposed by OLCC. It is basically going for information to be passed on from the different liquor stores that have computers or handheld to OLCC headquarters. And right now, everything is tracked on a monthly inventory electronically. We are audited twice a year. We do get download sheets from OLCC that shows our exact bottle sales per month of each item. And we feel this would be money that would be just put into a system that would not benefit any of us, neither the agents or OLCC. We just have more and more electronic information being transported and compiled, and we don't see a benefit from it. We would rather see, if anything, that money maybe go to the general fund and be earmarked for education rather than put into that. Plus, after 2 years, where does that extra money go? We feel that as when the state had its own computer systems in the stores, they had 50 of them, it was costing the state over 200 and some thousand, if I remember correctly, to maintain these systems. And this is what we foresee with this, is that it might start a maintenance nightmare where, as independent contractors, I think we're better off taking care of our own systems and providing all the information. If any liquor, if the state's worried that liquor might disappear or whatever, if anything does disappear, we're held 100% accountable at full retail to pay the state back.
So all pilferage, you bear all pilferage?
Yes.
How about breakage, you bear?
The breakage is usually picked up by the either the distillery ruts, if it's something to do with them. If it's broken coming in, it's picked up by the transportation companies. And usually, if it's something that isn't just ridiculous, OLCC will take care of that for us in the breakage.
I'm interested. You said some breakage is taken care of by the distillery reps?
Yes, if it looks like something that came from the distillery, either damaged, no labels, whatever that way, then it breaks down into three different divisions.
Okay, freight, distillery, and then at the store.
So you see, if it's missing, like theft or whatever, we're basically held 100% accountable for that.
How about earthquakes? I would have joked about that prior to 2 weeks ago.
I really don't know. We've never run into that. I was in my store when that happened. I watched the bottles dance. And it reminded me when I was in California, we used to take the shelves and you put a little, it was a door stopper that you used, they're the old rigid ones, and you put those every 2 feet and you put a piano wire all the way across the front. So when the bottles would dance from the earthquake, it hit the wire and they couldn't fall off onto the floor. And that was our earthquake insurance down there because we couldn't get coverage for the bottles and insurance. But that did cross my mind with the dancing going on. The other thing I wanted to bring up was that, as I said, I couldn't find any agent that was happy about the credit card increases, the paper bag costs being passed on, and also the reduced inventory. The 2 years ago when the committee met, they were talking about OLCC cutting back a certain amount. The amount has varied over the last 2 years from a couple million to almost 4 million. And it was stated that it was not supposed to come out of the agent's comp, but yet, in a way, with reducing of inventory and these possible other costs being passed on, it is going to come out of the agent's comp, because if I don't sell, I don't make money. And without sales and inventory to back it up, it's pretty hard. And in my particular case with tourists, I never know if a tourist is going to come down and buy which bottle, when and where, and how come. So it does make it kind of hard. I know the state has to save money, but if I could predict what a customer was going to buy week to week, month to month exactly, especially in a tourist area, I wouldn't be sitting here before you, because I'd be retired from the stock market. It's too hard to predict.
Thank you very much, Mr. Harold. Anything else? Anything further then?
In summing up, Representative Butler, like I said when I first sat down, the majority of the agents support the OLCC system. We don't agree with some of the decisions that have been made lately, but we do want to see the system stay intact. We do not want to see an open state. We do not want to see any move that might shift us towards that if we can possibly hope it.
Okay.
But we would like to try and make a decent living.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for your time.
You bet. I think that's a large portion of the testimony. We do have folks who are testifying on some specific items, and we would like to just go ahead and start at the top of the list if we could, and we'll move through as fast as we possibly can at this particular point. Mr. Morgan, Darrell Morgan. Welcome, Mr. Morgan. Would you state your name for the record, please?
Yes, sir. For the record, my name is Darrell Morgan. I am the agent at Agency 103 in Albany. One of the handouts that I'm having passed out is a letter that was written to the OLCC from the Agents Advisory Council, expressing their frustration. This was written about a year ago, and expressing their frustration with the OLCC and some of the things that went on. There were some points made, like Mr. Harold said, that seemed to fall on deaf ears, and Representative Johnson asked me for a copy of this yesterday when I talked to her, so I brought it for the whole committee. It wasn't actually part of my testimony. Chairman and members of the committee, this is my daughter, Amy Varell. She's a store manager at my store. I would like to begin by saying that I am not against checking to see that retailers and licensees are not breaking the law. I am, however, against the active position that all sellers of alcoholic beverages are guilty of selling alcohol to minors unless they are proven innocent. There are too many proactive approaches to this problem other than the very controversial approach now being taken, which is to cause a minor to violate a trespass law and commit another violation by attempting to purchase alcohol. I am solidly against the OLCC having untrained inspectors doing liquor stings. Their inspectors have the same responsibility as trained police officers. However, they are not subjected to the same rigorous standards of performance and accountability as police officers. I would like to give an example of an experience that happened to me. On May 11th of 2000, the OLCC sent a minor into my store to attempt to purchase alcohol. Per my instructions, his ID was confiscated and placed into a secure lockbox. My daughter, Amy, who is the manager of the store, was following the minor out the door while talking to the Albany police on a cordless telephone. A person posing as an OLCC officer flashed his badge and said, "I'm with the OLCC and I want that license back." Amy told him that it was in the lockbox, which could not be opened during the day by anyone other than the owner. The following day, the district manager, which is my district manager for the OLCC, Bruce Tilton, was directed to call my daughter and threatened to throw her in jail on Mother's Day weekend, and her bail would be $3,900. She had a wonderful Mother's Day, thanks to the OLCC, all because she did just exactly what she was supposed to do. After numerous discussions with the OLCC, they filed charges against Amy with the Linn County District Attorney. He refused to prosecute. The OLCC ultimately filed a notice of violation against me for not operating my store in a courteous and competent manner. To date, I have spent over $8,000 in attorney fees defending myself from this ludicrous charge. The first hearing was set for February 27th of 2001. After making arrangements for replacement employees to be at the store and my witnesses to take time off their jobs, the hearing was postponed because the Assistant Attorney General handling the case for the OLCC knew on Thursday that she was going to be sick on the following Monday. The hearing was rescheduled for March 20th of 2001. Less than 24 hours before the hearing was to start, the OLCC changed the charges from confiscating a minor's license to retaining a minor's license. This totally changed our defense, so we had to ask for a postponement. This hearing is now scheduled for the third time on May 29th of 2001. The question that needs to be asked is why, 9 months after the incident, they decided the first time to change the date and the second time to change the charge. Is it to punish me for standing up for my rights, or is it to run up their attorney bills and mine? So that when you ask these folks to spend less on AG fees, it won't be such a hit because they have already inflated that figure. The liquor inspector that was contracted to do the liquor stings for the OLCC has had numerous disciplinary problems, yet they still gave him a contract to do one of the most controversial duties in law enforcement. He was intimidating and conducted himself in a very unprofessional manner. This marks the third time I personally have had contact with this same person, and each time I have filed a complaint against him. This is just one of the many horror stories about the abuses of power by the OLCC. You will be hearing more of them in the future testimony, and if you're interested, you can log on to a newly formed website called domainnetworker.com. I have filed notice of a tort claim with the OLCC, which they are attempting to cancel through legislation. The OLCC needs strict oversight on enforcement issues. Currently, they have none. They need to eliminate their discriminatory practices about who they punish and how they punish them. At minimum, they, the OLCC, need you to impose objective standards to measure how their police function really is to be exercised appropriately. At present, they just make up the rules as they go along. There is a liquor agent in Portland that did the same thing I instructed my clerks to do, only he took the miner's license, cut it up with a pair of scissors, and handed it back to the miner. There were no charges filed against him. Their rules also call for a letter of congratulations to be sent to the agent if he successfully passes the liquor sting. To date, after numerous requests, I have received nothing but a notice of violation and an $8,000 attorney fee. Some reward for doing the right thing. I have some proposals that I would like to make. Number one is to let the OLCC write administrative rules, but let real police officers enforce them. Let cops be cops. If the OLCC wants officers of their own, then make them go through the Department of Public Safety standards and police training like everyone else that wants to be a cop. Otherwise, let real state and local police officers do the job of enforcement. They are the only real professionals in all of this. Require that the rules drafted by the OLCC proposing standards for sting law enforcement activity to be approved by the legislature or the legislative e-board before those rules can go into effect. This puts the power in the legislative body where it belongs. Thank you for your time and attention to this matter. Are there any questions?
Representative Hayden?
Well, I don't understand everything that happens not being a liquor agent. A minor comes in, a real minor, somebody who's really not 21, sent there by the OLCC, and they have some sort of ID. Does the ID have their real age of it or a false age?
Yes, it does. Has their real age.
Okay, so they're trying to buy it with their real own ID that says they're 17.
Yes, sir. Said he was 20, actually. We have an ID checker that I spent $1,800 for. We run the ID in that checker, and it comes up and sounds an alarm if there is a minor or if the identification has been altered in any way.
What's it checking? The barcode on the license?
Yes.
Or something?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so the barcode can't be changed, but the writing can?
The writing can or the picture can. I mean, we identify the picture and look at the weight and that stuff, which they can alter that also.
Oh, but you're not checking anything beyond, you're not online with some huge computer back
no,
in Washington,
sir.
D.C.?
No, sir.
Thank you.
And we will go through the objective standards on the sting operation. They can't they can't do anything, and I think that's important for us to just quickly touch base on that. In an OLCC conducted sting operation, they can't have any fraudulent ID. They can't make any fraudulent or misstatements. A minor will come with the license, or a minor will come up and attempt to purchase.
And this, 21.
He can hand him the license. I don't know that he can make a misstatement. I think that all misstatements, in other words, if they ask how old he is, he or she is, they have to tell the truth. And handing the license, you look at the license, and if the person says, and it can't be an altered license. It cannot be an altered piece of evidence. It's got to be good evidentiary information. So,
one more question.
Certainly, yes. Representative Hayden.
Follow-up. What's the authority to hold the license? Is there legislative statute or administrative rule?
It's against the law for a minor to trespass. I have a sign on my front door that says any minors entering this building without a parent or guardian will be violated for trespassing rule. It is also against the law for a minor to attempt to purchase alcohol. Those two authorities give me the authority to attempt to prosecute a minor for doing that. I have no way of knowing when that person comes in there whether he's with the OLCC or who he's with. They didn't identify themselves in this case until totally after the person was out of the store. The license had already been dropped in the lockbox. I retained that license for proof that the person was in the store. I turned that over to the police department in Albany at the same time that I filed a complaint against this minor for trespass and for attempting to purchase alcohol.
Well, my question is there any statutory authority for a store owner to keep a personal item of the customer?
There is no law for or against it. It's up to our own discretion.
Representative Johnson had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the second page of your testimony, you talked about your notice of tort claim that the Liquor Control Commission is attempting to cancel through legislation.
There is a bill, and I 2007, which, and I haven't read the amendment on it, but the first reading said something to the effect that they cannot be held liable for any past misconducts or something to that effect. I'm sorry, I don't have the exact wordage of that, but it was House Bill 2007.
In that regard, let me just state, Madam Chair, if I may.
Yes, please, go ahead.
Let me ask this question, Daryl. The ID checker that you've got right now, it scans the barcode, or you can slip a license through it. Is it one of those handheld devices?
No. This is one that has a scanner that I don't know what they're called. Yeah, an infrared scanner that scans that barcode, and you just flash it in front of it.
I understand there's some of those that when you stick a piece of ID in it, it'll actually mutilate it, similar to what the agent did in another situation in Portland where he cut it up with a pair of scissors. It actually will mutilate it. Overseas they have those kinds of things to detect errant foreign currency.
Mm-hmm.
That happened to a member of my family when he received back a $50 bill in a South American country and then tried to exchange the $50 bill at a bank. A little bit later on, they just ran it through a little checker and it just came out with punched holes all the way through it. And they said, there's your $50 bill back. Now, if you bring us a good $50 bill or a traveler check, we'll work with you. If you'd had that, and Amy would have run this piece I guess at that point it would be a valid piece of information, but it's invalidly presented. And if you had equipment which would stamp invalid or take a pretty good sized chunk out of that driver's license so that it would not ever appear back in your store, but what you'd know about it, do you know if that would be in violation of the law?
It's hard telling what they would try to do to me if I had that piece of identification.
They didn't do anything to the one that cut it up.
That's right. That's right. That's what I talk about, the discriminatory action that they take.
Representative Johnson.
I still don't understand. Is it against the law to confiscate someone's driver's license?
No, ma'am. It's not.
Okay.
I'm not so sure about that.
I think we'll let the OLCC let us know what their position is in that regard. I think I've come up with a few questions that I'd like to, what I would like to do is, Madam Chair, I've got a number of points that I'd like to bring back to the OLCC when they're back up testifying, if we could.
Are there any more questions of Daryl, or are we ready to take a break?
I think she's here more for a question than a discussion.
Did you have a better Mother's Day this year?
Not yet. I will.
Oh, okay, all right.
Hopefully.
It hasn't been Mother's Day yet, has it? I don't keep track of the
season. I'm sorry, I had another meeting and missed most of your testimony, but I can get tapes. They record.
You have a copy of it, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
One point that I would like to make, too, and I have had a couple of representatives request from the OLCC just exactly how much this whole situation has cost them in time, manpower. That has not come forth.
I know
at one point there were a group of several of them sitting around the radio listening to the Lars Larson show, which obviously they weren't getting any work done doing that when I was testifying on there, and I was on there twice, once for a three-hour period and once for an hour-and-a-half period. That's time consumed for a state agency. There was one point when District Attorney Josh Marquis made a comment that the OLCC would be better off leaving this thing alone because it could only get worse. But they haven't chosen to take his advice.
That was a Department of Justice or
District Attorney Josh Marquis, who is recent or is quite often on the Lars Larson show.
Okay. Thank you.
Lars contacted him for his opinion, and that was his opinion.
Madam Chair, I'd like to question that testimony. Sir, you said, would you define this for me? You said a person posing as an OLCC officer. What does that mean? Were they or were they not an LLC?
You know, I'm assuming that he was, but the way that he identified himself was not proper, in my opinion, and the way to identify yourself is to hold your badge out, let somebody take a look at it, give them a business card. All he did was what I classify as this Gestapo flip of the badge. I'm with the OLCC. And
so a person stated that he was an OLCC officer.
He stated, I'm with the OLCC, and I want that license back.
Okay.
Thank you, Darrell. Peter, were you going to?
Yes, I am, Madam Chair.
Okay.
Madam Chair, ladies and gentlemen of the Ways and Means Subcommittee, my name is Peter Grapel. I have been an agent for the OLCC at Agency 193 in Eugene for over 15 years. The issue of underage drinking is of very serious concern to all of us, but the method of undercover sting operations and the OLCC's practice of writing administrators' rules, which they choose to enforce arbitrarily and selectively, is not an effective way to address this problem. This approach is fundamentally flawed. Other states have similar problems, but approach the issue very differently. At a recent conference, a commissioner of the Pennsylvania Liquor Control Board stated, the underage drinking problem is huge, but this is not a situation that we can arrest our way out of. We need to educate our way out of this situation. Undercover stings using underage operatives is not the answer. This and similar opinions and approaches were reported in a recent issue of State Ways, which is a magazine that comes out in all 18 controlled states. Furthermore, when the OLCC hires an enforcement agent, that person is sworn in by the chairman of the OLCC, receives his or her badge, and goes to work. In order to receive peace officer status, there is no requirement for this person to go through a similar training program as any other police officer is required to complete before he has earned the status and the recognition of a peace officer. The state of Washington, for example, requires their new enforcement agents to take 740 hours of instruction at the State Police Academy before they can go and work in that field. The head of that organization in Washington is a 20-year veteran with the state police, and he's a captain that has retired. I would think this is a much more responsible approach. Following are some case histories that show what's going on in the field that clearly illustrate OLCC's selective and arbitrary enforcement of current administrative rules. Case number one, a Safeway store in Damascus accumulated 4 violations for selling alcohol to a minor about 3 or 4 years ago. The rule at that time stated that the store's license to sell beer and wine would be suspended for 30 days. But OLCC staff could not see themselves enforcing this rule against such a large grocer as Safeway. So instead, they formed a committee and changed the rule. The new rule stated that they could continue to sell if they sent their sales clerk to a class teaching responsible sales of alcoholic beverages and pay a nominal fee of about $500. Case number two. The agent at Mall 205 in Portland had several stings in the store. He has a letter in his possession from the Portland Police Bureau stating that on one particular day, they conducted several stings in his store as part of an area-wide sting effort. They were aiming for 100% success rate for their effort that day, but despite numerous attempts, he passed every time. A liquor agent's store is his livelihood, but they consider it a sport. They wanted him to fail. He later accumulated 3 violations over a period of time, even though he sent a sales clerk to the recommended classes and bought a $1,500 machine to help verify the validity of ID. OLCC forced him to pay a $5,000 fine so he could keep operating his store. They informed him that if he did not pay this fine, he would lose his store if he got one more violation. This is punitive action, not constructive. Case number 3. The Uptown liquor store in Portland confiscated the driver's license of a minor during a sting operation. He cut the license in 2 and returned the pieces to the minor. The next day, OLCC threatened him with a $3,900 fine for destroying government property. The agent did not pay, and OLCC staff chose not to follow through with the threat. In April 2000, OLCC enforcement sent an underage operator into my store, and the clerk successfully denied the sale. Following my instructions, she put the driver's license into a drop safe under the counter. Then several police officers and OLCC enforcement came up and demanded the return of the ID. She told them she had no access to the safe and they called me at home. I refused to return the ID because the minor had violated the law when he entered the store and I needed it to file charges against the minor on the following day. We have two large signs in front of the store, on the doors. One says no minor allowed. The other one says any minor participating in the selection or purchase of alcohol is subject to a minimum of $350 fine, both issued by OOCC. Eight officers surrounded this petite little woman, threatened her to arrest her, and took her to the back of the store, causing such a disruption in my store for 45 minutes on a busy Friday night that my store was out of control and customers were not being served. I received a notice of violation for not being courteous and failure to follow the directions of a peace officer. OOCC staff present never properly identified themselves, nor was it explained that this was a sting until things were totally out of hand. To my knowledge, there has never been a complaint filed against me for selling to minors in the past 10 years, so this action was not prompted by improper activities on the part of my staff or myself. These things are many times creating a problem where none exists. So far, it has cost me over $4,000 to defend myself against this notice of violation. I can only have three. If I have three or more in 3 years, I can lose my license. This hearing had been scheduled a number of times, or has been rescheduled a number of times. The last one, it was scheduled for March 20th. 36 hours before the hearing, my attorney received a fax at his office at 8 p.m. Sunday night, notifying him that the charges against me had been amended. We now start all over again with research on the new charges, and I can expect to spend another $4,000 on this defense, and the hearing will be over a year after the alleged violation took place. In case number five, that happened in Fort Klamath, and I will read this to you. I have a letter here from the agent that is addressed to the 71st Oregon Legislative Assembly. For the last year, we've been living a nightmare created by the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. In March of last year, my daughter-in-law, Audrey, was watching the store that we own when an OOCC sting operation came in. A man, who we later were to learn was the officer in charge, arrived in our store and hung around. He seemed to have no purpose for being there. He refused assistance from Audrey and hung around the cash register and the gun area. Her liquor store is a combination gun store, grocery store, and liquor store. He was there for more than 10 minutes, by which time Audrey began to think he was there to rob us. She saw what she believes was a handgun attached to his belt, which made her even more nervous. After 10 minutes of this, Audrey was ready to call our son at home and have him come up and help her out. But before she was able to do this, a group of four people came in and she got busy. One of the people in this group went to the cage liquor area in the back and removed through the bars a bottle of liquor. He then brought it to the front counter. This further threw Audrey off because it was in a cage and he had to really work to get it out. She explained that all liquor had to be purchased from the back at the cage and took him back there. She was uncomfortable doing this because this other man was still hanging around the front of the door near the cash register and the gun counter, but she didn't see what else she could do at this point. When she sold the liquor to the man, she guessed his age at 27 or so and did not card him. She was more worried about getting back to the front to watch the other man. Of course, after this was done, she found out that this was a sting operation and she had messed up. They then intimidated her and told her they could lock the doors right then and there or even take her to jail. Scared this sweet little thing to death. They then cited her for knowingly and willingly selling alcohol to a minor. This is when the nightmare began. The nightmare included a trip to the Klamath County jails where she was physically searched and booked. Knowingly and willingly selling to a minor is a Class A felony, so she was treated like any criminal who has shot or robbed someone. Since there are no rules for the counties to apply to these situations, Klamath County then decided to prosecute her to the full extent of the law. They wanted 1 year and a $5,000 fine, which that 1 year was 1 year jail, for what in essence was merely a failure to check ID. The citation, though, allowed them to do this since it was written for knowingly and willingly selling alcohol to a minor. We spent months in court fighting this, all the time making it clear that Audrey was more than willing to plead guilty to failure to check ID, but would not allow herself to be found guilty for the greater charge of knowingly and willingly selling to a minor. This would ruin her life, and she wasn't guilty of it. She was guilty of not checking the person's ID. Finally, after we hired an attorney for $1,500, the district attorney's office agreed to the lesser charge of failure to check ID and Audrey paid a $500 fine. Now, you may say, oh, this was just the cost of doing business, but it isn't for us. We have a small grocery store way out in the country. Our daughter-in-law was not a paid employee. She was a family member helping us out in a pinch. It cost her time from her real job, 6 trips to the Klamath County Court. It cost us 6 trips to the court. I went with her every time, and it cost us $2,000 in fines and attorney fees. All this because some overeager inspector thought he could assert authority that he didn't have and destroy someone's life. He very nearly did. He lied to cover his behavior. We had proof that he lied, but he had all the authority and we had none. I believe that OLCC has been given more authority than they should have, so I believe that alcohol should never be sold to a minor. I believe they should train us and not punish us. Now I'd like to finish my testimony here. It won't take much longer. As you can see, the enforcement of the rules in these violations vary from one case to the next. When agents are appointed to manage these stores for OLCC, it is after careful review of our background, our business experience, and our good moral character. The moment we become agents, we are no longer trustworthy, and they use entrapment of any kind to entice us to sell liquors to a minor. When we question the basis of the law that authorizes this action, they compare us with drug dealers and prostitutes, where this type of undercover operation is used all the time. I very much resent this comparison. We are contractors chosen by the OLCC staff. We are given the authorization to sell a legal product from an established place of business. Liquor agents are very concerned about sales to minors, and we work very hard to prevent them. But our efforts are not recognized as a contribution to OLCC's program. Since we as the sellers are the only people directly involved and have daily contact with the purchasers, I believe our contributions and experience could be valuable in the efforts to deter purchases by minors, but they are ignored continually. Instead, OLCC writes and administrates any rule in a confrontational manner without any constructive input from agents. Several bills have been introduced this session proposing substantial changes within OLCC, as well as a number of lawsuits filed by agents regarding violations of civil rights and their contracts. The time is now to take a serious look at the functions of this agency and make the necessary steps to keep the elements required for the welfare of Oregon citizens while eliminating the destructiveness and unnecessary bureaucracy. Until their enforcement staff is trained as any other peace officer within this state, they should not have a role in law enforcement, and no funding for this activity should be provided in their budget. If you have any questions, I'll be glad to answer.
Thank you. Any questions of the committee? Representative Butler?
I just wanted to, Peter, relative to the first page, item number 2 on your letter, the liquor agent involved here indicates that they're aiming for 100% success rate and these area-wide sting efforts. He later accumulated 3 violations over a period of time, even though he sent his sales clerk to the recommended classes and bought a $1,500 machine. Is that the responsible vendor program? You know, was that?
I believe it is. That was just the program being formed at the time.
Okay.
And he.
When was that? When did that occur? On mall number 205.
Approximately 12 months ago.
Okay. So basically March of 2000.
As close as I can guess it.
Okay. And informed him that if he did not pay the fine, he could lose the store if he got one more violation. Do you know if they were involved in the responsible vendor program?
No, I do not.
Okay. And then, Madam Chair, just one more question in that regard. Let's see. The Safeway store in Damascus indicate that they went ahead and sent their clerks to a responsible vendor program, and then they paid fines for the excess violations.
That is correct.
Okay. Are you proposing that we go ahead in your second full paragraph, you're proposing that somehow we have greater enforcement for the actual agents for the OLCC that run this thing operations? Is that what your request is, Peter?
My request is, Representative Butler, that these enforcement agents be properly trained within the law so they know what their authorization is, what their liabilities are, what normal procedures are. I do not believe that these things get treated different depending on the type of store, whether it is a liquor store or a grocery store. I believe they all operate under similar circumstances.
And finally, and I probably should have asked this of Mr. Harold, did you, and Mr. Morgan and Mr. Harold both, Mr. Morgan, did you receive notice that you might be subject to any kind of a sting operation in your store?
No, I was not, Representative Butler.
Do you know if down in Fort Klamath they had received any notice?
No, sir, they have not.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just actually, Representative Butler asked most of what I was going to ask, but I just wanted to take it one step farther. Have you ever in the past received notice prior to any of these sting operations in your experience?
Representative Gardner, Madam Chair, the OLCC at one time sent out a letter about 2.5 years ago that they would notify agents in writing when a proposed sting was supposed to happen. And they also indicate in that letter that normally a sting would only happen if they had received written complaints about that particular store from the public. And then 14 days later, we had a sting in our store that was put together by the City of Eugene Police Department and the local OLCC enforcement. And so I called OLCC and wanted to know where my letter was, and they excused themselves and said, well, this was a city police operation, we had nothing to do with it. But at the same time, they had two agents there videotaping the whole thing, and they also lent a car to the police department because they were running a big sting throughout the whole town and they didn't have enough vehicles. So they just chose to ignore their own rules.
Okay, thank you.
Were you later able to see the file? Had there been written complaints about your establishment?
Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, as far as I know, there are no complaints against my store. I have never been shown any of them.
Okay. Thank you very much. And we are going to take our 5-minute break now.